The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2011 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2011. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
This workshop is entitled Everybody's Reading Boni Libri, and I'm Kenwin Trotter from Trinitas Christian School in Pensacola, Florida. Let's begin with prayer, shall we? Father, thank you for your goodness to us and for this beautiful day that we have together. Thank you that as brothers and sisters in Christ, we get to come to this conference. And I just pray, Lord, that all that is said and done here will bring honor to your name. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. Well, good morning. Did everybody get a handout? They're on this side by that, the doors there. Deb Blakey's got some in the back for us. I want to share with you today some information about a great books reading program outside of the classroom and a way to implement this without breaking your homework bank at the school. If you're like us, you hate to assign homework. So, I'm currently the dean of students at Trinitas, but I was in the classroom for 10 years, and I typically was teaching the 5th or 6th grade. And my husband and I were also part of the founding of our school. So when we started the school, we began working with families, and it quickly became clear that reading was not a high priority in many homes. In fact, it was a dying art. Although our families expressed a great desire to have this classical education thing that we were offering, they didn't realize it would take so much reading. Okay, so they'd trust us and say, okay, we want to read. But I don't like to read, and my child doesn't either. So now what do I do? Here we were telling families, you need to read together, you need to read aloud, you need to discuss what you're reading individually together at the dinner table. Get the discussion going. And they would nod in agreement, and then they'd go home, and they didn't know how to do that. They didn't know where to begin. We realized we had to take a few steps back and begin with introducing families and students to the joy of reading and literature. How to do that? Well, we made a few conscious decisions. One was to read aloud in the classroom for approximately 50 minutes a day. And I'm talking K-4 through 12th grade. Our librarian also decided she would read aloud to the younger grammar school classes once a week when they came to the library. And in addition, and this is where I'm going to spend our time, outside of the classroom, we decided we would recommend, nay, we would require and assign great literary works for students to read. And this was the birth of our Boni Libri, the Good Books program. Now, just so that you'll know where we were at, we called it Boni Libri at the beginning. We had no idea how to speak Latin, but we knew it should be named something in Latin. We found out later it means good scales, so we changed it now to really good books. All right, so let me start first with why you should implement a great books reading program of some kind. Now, that may seem obvious to you as an educator, but we did have to ask ourselves this fundamental question, and we had to have a reason to tell our parents why we were imposing this great books reading on them. Okay, so why read the good books? Primarily because you and I are Christians. We're little Christs, and since Christ is the Word of God, we are thus people of the Word. We must learn to love words, beautiful words, to imitate God in using words to narrate the stories of our lives. Many of our families had to be purposeful in learning to love words, in persevering in seeking this love. But the Holy Spirit has been faithful in helping many of our parents grow in that they began with a little desire to love words, and then it grew into affection, and it blossomed into ardent love. God chose stories to narrate his world, and it is the singular gift of man to imitate this divine narration by means of his own creative word, his own stories. Christians, in turn, are those who can appreciate narratives in light of the divine story they realize themselves to be participating in, the Christ narrative. So by becoming readers, we grow in our understanding of the narration of creation that whispers all around us. So the first reason is because we're Christians. Second, we read good books in order to grow in knowledge and wisdom and maturity. We read in order to be better educated, not for education's sake, but in order to be grown and challenged, transformed, to become eloquent writers and careful thinkers. Reading is, when you think about it, a culture in and of itself. It's a community. If you're a reader, you're involved in the great conversation. Books communicate life and create a common language, thereby defeating Babel. Reading gives children, indeed all of us, a way of practicing the morality of situations without actually having to be in them. We learn through the mistakes and victories of those who've gone before. And these lessons, the old lessons, are the ones that will prove the most useful in the future. The 12th century monk Bernardus of Silvestris wrote, "We see farther because we stand on the shoulders of giants." As believers, we stand on the shoulders of a great cloud of witnesses and are able to build on their wisdom by hearing their voices through books. But children are not going to stumble onto good books by themselves. They have to be introduced to the wonder of words, beautifully put together. So what we've done is created a way to purposefully train students to read good books. So we created Boni Libri, and it's a reading plan structured around the grades and designed to guide our families in and to good literature. We certainly do not want any of our students graduating from our classical schools without having read A.A. Milne, Laura Ingalls Wilder, E.B. White, Jules Verne, Shakespeare. Can you imagine if we sent a graduate out who had not joined in the conversation with C.S. Lewis or Tolkien? Victor Hugo? It's quite unacceptable for us, isn't it? And so our graduates who have been classically educated, they should have read the great classics of Western civilization. Seems kind of obvious, but I think sometimes it's the obvious thing that we let go. So the entire Boni Libri program is designed to first introduce students to well-written literature and then to train them and their families to understand and appreciate the good books. Now, there's a caveat here. We at Trinitas are not of the opinion that we just needed to get the children to read anything. Filling their minds with poorly written words and phrases will result in poorly crafted essays and poorly worded conversations. If you put junk food in, you will get garbage out. You put cream in, you will get cream out. So we tell our students that if they read a trendy junk book, it's like eating a little Debbie. You can't make a steady diet of it and expect to live very long. So we're Christians, and we should do everything to the glory of God, including our reading. C.S. Lewis said it well in The Discarded Image when he said, "Literature exists to teach what is useful, to honor what deserves honor, to appreciate what is delightful. The useful, honorable, and delightful things are superior to it. It exists for their sake. Its own use, honor, or delightfulness is derivative from theirs." He's saying that as our students are taught to read well, they should also be growing in their love for great literature. Have I piqued your interest? Would you like to know how to implement a good books program? Here was our plan of attack. We began with a vision statement, first and foremost, and we put this in our family handbook. It's very short. Here's ours. It says, "Trinitas Christian School believes that the development of reading skills and the enjoyment of good books and quality writing is the first step to embracing a love of learning. We have therefore adopted a two-phase reading program called Boni Libri, designed to compel our students to read quality, age-appropriate works that are in many cases considered classics by the literary world. And that was the end. So you've got your vision statement in place. Next, find a librarian who is a bibliophile and has a heart for seeing others read. Someone who can recommend books from every genre and is a proven reader. This does not necessarily mean that he or she has to have a library sciences degree. Okay. Look around your parent base. There may be a mom or dad there who truly loves books. It wouldn't hurt if that person had a little disposable income so that they could volunteer for you. That would be receiving above and beyond all that we could ask or think from the Lord, which he delights in doing, so pray now. Pray for a librarian. Pray with great faith. So you have a volunteer librarian, and she comes in one day a week. She'll open the library one day a week. What library? Mm-hmm. If you're starting from scratch like we did, get an old AV cart or an old library cart. Just start piling on the books. That's what we had. We had a little cart that we put the best books we could find on, and that was our library. And we picked a library day, and we would push the cart around from room to room and check out books to the children. It was the library. That was the library to them. Don't despise small beginnings. Of course, if you have a building with an extra room, an extra closet can be a library. If you can fit a stack in there, you can fit a bookshelf in there, that can be your library. So you have your library, your librarian, your library. Now you have to have a Boni Libri book list in order to guide you as you fill your cart up with books. Don't give in to the temptation to run to the local bookstore and grab their book list. Don't do this. Begin with three guiding principles before you put the first book on your list. One, that beautiful writing and biblical thinking are concepts that go hand in hand. Biblical thinking and beautiful writing are concepts that are inextricably woven. Two, our faith is not Victorian pietism or G-rated moralism, and neither should our reading be. Don't go and pick up all the Disney books and put them on your cart. And three, as we teach our students to read, we must also teach them to think like Christians so that they can read the writing of gifted but godless men and women. Don't accept a book solely on current literary acceptance. It must exhibit literary merit. Remember that your library is probably limited in size. That the main focus of your library is to house a body of works that will stand the test of time in their value for the education of your students. This means we have to evaluate books on the basis of truth, beauty, and goodness. So before you put anything on your list, get that in your head. Okay, I'm going to look at this book, Truth, Beauty, Goodness. Truth, Beauty, Goodness. Don't accept books because there's nothing wrong with that. Or because, oh, there's a time for fun. While we believe strongly in exuberant fun, joyful, laughing out loud fun, we also believe that fun has God-honoring boundaries. Now, adapted or abridged works are considered on an individual basis only and should be rarely accepted in your library. In fact, the only two abridged books that we have put on our library shelves are Don Quixote, because the windmills got a little much, the whole thing, and Paul Benishu's abridgment of Les Miserables, because the sewers. Who, the sewer? Has anybody read the sewers? just done the sewer of Paris. I felt like I could go walk through the Paris sewers. So we only have two abridged books on our stacks. All right. So here is our book selection criteria. We relied on these resources for our book selection process: Honey for a Child's Heart by Gladys Hunt. That is a fantastic resource. If you know someone who's pregnant or just had a baby, that is a great gift because it starts at the very beginning with what you should be reading to infants. It's a great book. The Book Tree, Let the Author Speak, Great Books of the Christian Tradition by Terry Glaspie, books children love. And then we also relied on our sweet friends at Veritas Press. Their catalog has a wonderful, it's kind of like a list all of itself. Very helpful. We also culled from the collected personal recommendations of our librarian, Mrs. Kathy Noland, and our rhetoric school teachers. We kind of sat down and talked about it. And our book list, as I think you would find, is ever-evolving, and every so often we'll consider putting another one on there. All right, so those are just some ideas for you to make your own book list. Books that can't be found on any of these resources or even on a list of known or recognized literary classics, whether authors or titles, we choose to make eligible for rejection or subject to approval by our Board of Governors. We have parents who wanted to donate books very kindly, but we had to have a criteria process. And this way, we give our librarian the option to reject things, or even the Board of Governors can look at something if our librarian's not so sure. All of our books must exhibit at least one of the following characteristics there. It should be historically significant or have literary value, be well written, be well known in the canon of classical work, and I think C.S. Lewis said this well, that children's books should be pleasing for adults as well, excluding picture books. Now, I don't know about you, but a good picture book is still fun to look at, isn't it? So we require that our book should exhibit at least one of those characteristics. We have another list of criteria for picture books. Picture books selected for the grammar school should meet one or more of this list of criteria. Should be good reading practice for beginning readers, or have no offensive, overtly ungodly behavior unless dealt with as sin, following scriptural principles, or be filled with beautiful illustrations, or be recognized as historically or culturally significant, or be autobiographical or biographical. There's one that we recently put in that had the most glorious painting, watercolor paintings, that we could put up with a very small story that went along with it, but the paintings were worthy of putting that book in. You have to be careful with picture books. Every so often the text does not justify the beautiful paintings. Now, we have said that our picture books do not have to pass board approval, but they do have to pass the librarian's approval, and if she deems it necessary, she can go seek the approval by an administrator. But whatever you do, have a defense for why you include certain books on your list. If you're not sure, hold them back. until you've really made a good judgment call and you've had time to really go and seek counsel. We had to know, why do we have Dr. Seuss on our list? Well, the sing-song rhythmic repetition of Seuss's words and phrases make hearing his books read aloud really fun. And it's a great tool to teach listening skills, having that rhythmic fun. Why put a book on if it's written by a pagan? Because we recognize that God's mercy falls on the just and the unjust, and that godless writers can also be blessed with amazing ability. Praise the Lord. But we must be diligent to train our students to ask themselves critical questions before, during, and after reading, like, what is this author's worldview? What is he trying to say to me? What are his intentions in writing this book? Is what he's saying true? How are good and evil presented in this book? By asking these questions as I read, our children are better equipped to refuse to follow godless writers in their despair or whatever else they're writing about. Now, by allowing non-Christian books on our Bonnie Libri list, we realize that we may also be dealing with expletives. A steady diet of cursing should not be tolerated. But there are greater concerns, aren't there, in underlying thematic paganism than in a few curse words. So be watching for that. Even before starting a book with cursing, such as Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn, we discuss with the students what they'll be encountering and how to handle it in a mature fashion as a Christian young lady or a young man. I'm technologically challenged. Another item for which to be prepared, particularly if you're teaching third grade and your third graders are reading all those mythology books. Have you seen some of those with the art in them? Mm-hmm. They will be encountering selections of art in their books that portray nudity. So you need to have a reason. When you send one of those home and you have a parent who calls and says, did you see the picture of Athena in this book? You need to be able to say, yes, ma'am, I sure did. And then be able to explain, hey, artists use nudity for a variety of reasons. To represent innocence, guilt, shame, poverty, timelessness, even naturalness. Another use is that they're celebrating God's highest earthly creation. And so I just want you to know that we're distinguishing that for the children. There's a between art and pornography. What we did is we typed up this whole statement, the board did, and we included that for our families to know. We have a statement on nudity because there is nudity in some of these great books. Immodesty, partial nudity, soft pornography have become regular parts of our popular culture. And it's important that we begin to train families and students to learn to differentiate between pornography and art. By teaching them to make judgments about art founded on objective standards of truth, goodness, and beauty, we're preparing our students to think righteously, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Now, this may seem irrelevant in the face of our culture and what it places before our children's eyes, but it's the way to fight back. All right, now I'm going to stand on my little soapbox. Make sure that you include a liberal dose of fairy tales on your Bonnie Libri list. Fairy tales train our children's minds to be open to the impossible. Impossible like turning water to wine stuff. Like pulling coins out of a fish's mouth. That's impossible. While the modern fairy tale extols the timeless virtues of drinking animal blood and fighting shirtless wolf boys, we want our boys to learn real masculinity and our girls real femininity. We aren't raising girls who swoon. We're raising women who stand in the gates behind their husbands. Our boys don't glitter like crystal. They're men like steel. Choose whom you will stand with. the angst-ridden adolescent of our day who whines as he debates whether to do right or not, or with the child from Grimm's Tales who simply does the right thing, not knowing what will happen to him. Are you with Harry or with Hansel? Edward Cullen or Arthur Pendragon? Are you with those who fear death or those who go out hunting for dragons? G.K. Chesterton has a fine discussion on the importance of fairy tales in his book Orthodoxy, Chapter 4. He says, and I summarize, "My first and last philosophy, that which I believe in with unbroken certainty, I learnt in the nursery. The things I believed most then, the things I believe most now, are the things called fairy tales. They seem to me to be the entirely reasonable things. They are not fantasies. Compared with them, other things are fantastic. Fairyland is nothing but the sunny country of common sense." Isn't that great? Fairyland is nothing but the sunny country of common sense. Okay, so in summary, have a strong foundation for your reading program, for it is crucial. If you're merely reading for reading's sake, then there's no reason to read 1984. Or Night by Elie Wiesel. But if you realize that part of reading is joining in a great conversation, then you will want to converse and refute and defend, in short, be challenged and changed by the great thinkers of every age. Okay, you have your librarian, your cart, your library day, your Boni Libri lists. Now where to get the books? Where do you get books? Now, if your librarian is like really has a lot of disposable income, maybe she can buy the whole library, but I doubt that will ever happen. So what we did is we haunted library cast-off sales and public school library warehouses where they tend to give away the best books. And they're typically hardback books. We would go to a warehouse and get books for free, classics. We went to estate sales, garage sales. There wasn't a lot of garage sales. Goodwill stores, any kind of book giveaway. Look in the newspaper. Watch for those things. Look for secondhand bookstores. There's several here in Atlanta. Something else that was very productive for us was to establish a birthday honorarium system where parents donate a hardbacked copy of their child's favorite book from our Boni Libri list, and then we would put a big sticker on the front cover of the book that said "in honor of," and we put the child's name and their birth date in there. And that was a very big success. We also have done that with teachers' birthdays or special days, weddings, births of their children. And we found we quickly had a huge collection of books. In fact, you may find you're inundated with books. So make sure that you're following your list from which parents can choose properly, or else they can even donate money and the librarian can go and get the next book from the list to put the sticker in. So you have your library cart. You have your volunteer librarian who commits to one library day a week and sets up a schedule with your grammar school teachers for them to come in and visit the library or to take your cart to their room. The librarian will also need to train your logic and rhetoric school students on the basics of library knowledge so that they can come in and check out books on an honor system. We let our children come in and borrow books, renew books, return books at any time in the logic and rhetoric school. And you've developed your list from which students and teachers can choose books. Now, assign 2 great works per 9-week grading period to each student. If you're on a 6-week grading period, we did 1 book per 6 weeks with some considerations here. If I assigned a large book, say Stonewall Jackson's biography or Gone with the Wind, one book. That takes a long time to read 900 pages if you're doing homework as well. So consider your student's frame. Thank you. Bravo. Then what we do is, after we've assigned the book, we fill out an assignment form and send it home for the parents. Did you all get a copy of the assignment form? It may be on the back. Okay. We want the parents to approve the chosen book. We want the parents to be in touch with what we're assigning, because we have had parents who said, no, I don't want them to read that for whatever reason. Or, no, we're saving that for the summer. We're going to read that together. All right, so give the parents a chance to see what you're assigning. We also have encouraged our parents to read that book, up to half of it, aloud with their students, which is really helpful, because then you're also kind of fostering that reading aloud time together. After reading the book, the student is to write a summary of it on a 4x6 index card, and that's the front of the handout that I gave to you. That 4x6 index card is then turned in, checked for accuracy and grammar errors by the teacher, and then it's kept in a file box. These right here, I brought some for you to look at, some of our Boni Libri card box. The student then is, we collect those through the years that they're at Trinitas, and then upon graduation, they're given their whole set of Boni Libri cards, which is a really neat reference tool for them for the rest of their lives. Now, in order to give our students a way to go above and beyond these required elements, and in order to really fully saturate them in literature, we offer an optional part of our Boni Libri, and it's called the Reading Calendar Challenge. We recommend that students read 30 minutes per day outside of class throughout the school year. We provide them with a calendar. There we go. To keep track of their reading minutes. If they read 600 minutes per month throughout the entire school year, we recognize that accomplishment at our honors and awards ceremony at the end of the year with a reading medal. And this is what they're awarded, and it has the year on the back, and it has a book on the front. Okay, and you'd be surprised how far this medal goes to goading them to read those 600 minutes a month. They kind of like to hear the clink, I think, against their buttons when they are awarded this. But we take reading very seriously, and we want them to as well. All right, so let me review the steps again, and I'll show you all the forms. First, here's a copy of our Boni Libri list. This is the first page of our grammar school list. We have one for the grammar school, and then there's the one for the logic and rhetoric. At the top of the list, we have starred all of the literature titles that our teachers read aloud that are mandatory curriculum. Same with here in seventh grade, our Traditio titles, which is like our omnibus. We have Magna Traditio. Those highlighted ones are the ones that they read aloud together in class. Those are mandatory curriculum titles. So if we have a new sixth grader, someone who has not been at Trinitas for his early years, then the sixth grade teacher can look at that list and catch him up on the ones that he was not here for, that the mandatory titles. We really want our students to have a common language at our school. And so if he has not read The Hobbit or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, we assign those because those were mandatory titles in the fifth grade and in the fourth grade year. So as a teacher, you chat with your student. You find out what kind of things they like to read. You ask, what have you been reading recently? And the two of you go and you pick a book together from the list for that grade. Now you use your assignment form. And again, that's just a way to formalize this agreement that you've made with your student. Okay? And again, it lets the parents have some input on what you are assigning. Our parents sign it, and then it comes back for the teacher to keep a record of it. And that also gives you a way to know what 4x6 card you expect to get at the end of the 9-week period. Then you give your student the template of what their book report is supposed to look like. We ask that they follow this form rather rigidly so that there's uniformity amongst the grades and throughout the years. They can't do it on a 3x5 card. It has to be 4x6. They can't put any information they like on here, right? We require the book title and the author, the student name, their grade level, and how many pages there are. We require the page numbers because, quite frankly, it helps us to make sure that they've got the right version of the book, that they've read the number of pages we think that they are capable of reading. And since not many teachers have read every book on our list, it also helps the teacher. Oh, that's right. Okay, I assigned her a 100-page book. She's not a very fast reader. Okay, so it helps our teachers keep track of that. Also on the front, we require that they list the main characters of the work so that they can begin to think through the protagonists and the antagonists, the type, the anti-type, all of that. Now, if you assign an anthology where there may be numerous stories with lots of characters, we ask that the student choose one or two of their favorite stories from the anthology and then record those characters there. Okay. For nonfiction books, we require a simple statement there that says nonfiction, no main characters. For example, had a rhetoric school student who read Harry Blaemeyer's The Christian Mind. So you just had to put on there, no main characters. Same with Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning. Our 12th graders read that, so they just put no main characters. Okay. It just has to be noted. On the back of the 4x6 card, we require a synopsis of the book. This summary causes the student to analyze literature on their own, making judgments on what's important to include in the summary, as well as what was good and bad about the book. So we ask them also to make a judgment call at the end. Did you like it and why? A brief statement. It's very fun for them upon graduation to look back at what they said about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Sal the Dirty Dog, you know, as a very young person. It's very fun. Now, this summary begins very simply when they're young. For example, a K-5 student, if he's just finished McCloskey's Blueberries for Sal, he may be asked by mom or dad, okay, we got to write your Boni Libri card. What was this book about? And mom's got pen ready because here comes this stream of consciousness, right? Well, it was about a little girl who went blueberry picking with her mom. She got lost. She followed a bear. But the bear's cub got lost, too, and the cub followed mom's. Sal's mom, and they each found their moms, and everything was fine, and they ate a lot of blueberries. And mom's writing feverishly. And so we say to mom, write all that down, then go back and show your student that you're going to, look how I'm going to make this into a better sentence for you. This sounds better. Look, I fixed the grammar. Now let's read it again together. They read the card, and then the student takes what mom's written on a piece of paper and writes it nicely on the 4x6 card in their best handwriting. Okay? We do encourage our parents to help their students, especially in the early years, to write that and to just copy their parents, what their parents have fixed for them. We also ask the student to make a final comment, and that helps to begin constructive literary criticism. Now, that card is due on the last day of the 9-week period. If they finish it early, of course, there's no need to wait until the last day to do so, but they're not required to turn it in until the last day of the term. The teacher files the cards alphabetically in the box, and this is just two of the three that I have for our 10th graders right now. So each grade has a Boni Libri box, and then as they progress through the years, each grade has several boxes, quite a number of cards. A fun thing that we've done to assign is to assign one title to an entire class. So last year, our 9th graders all read for Boni Libri Pride and Prejudice. And then they were able to discuss it in class together and at lunch. And that made for very interesting discussions. Another real beauty of having everybody read the same book is that then their Traditio teacher could come along and through discussion show them what they were supposed to see as they were reading. Remember that we're luring them into becoming Christians who think critically about literature. And so they thoroughly enjoyed that, doing that together and talking about the one book. Here's some considerations as you're implementing the Good Books program and as you're developing the taste buds in the minds of your students and families. First, remember the frame of the children to whom you are assigning books. You will have a fifth grader who comes from a long line of non-readers to whom you can only assign the easiest of your listed books for fifth grade. May even be his first year at your school, and he is far behind in his comprehension. And so you're going to have to go down to the third grade list and pick something. That's good. Remember that you're wooing him to love reading. You don't want to exasperate him. Bring him along. In your same fifth grade class, you're going to have a student who comes from a long line of National Merit Scholars and avid readers. And you may have to dig deeply and broadly in order to find a book he has not yet read. Do not allow him to read Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray or Orwell's Animal Farm. Don't allow that, okay? Consider his frame and realize that although he may be able to read the words, he may even be able to understand some of the concepts, he cannot handle the mature themes of those works. He's not ready. Don't allow them to read above what they can handle. Okay? And they'll say to you, I can read it though. No, trust me. You don't need to read this yet. Remember Corrie ten Boom? You can't handle holding the ticket yet. Wait. This is where we hearken back to the necessity of having a great librarian, who knows her books and will not recommend inappropriate books to your students, or a teacher who will not do that, who will keep close tabs on your students. Know your students' strengths and weaknesses as writers so that you can assign accordingly as well. A poor writer does not need to be reading Victorian English or authors who fiddle with sentence structure. Right? Rather, the student who struggles with writing well-crafted sentences needs to read books laden with perfectly structured, grammatically pure phrases and paragraphs. Don't assign Jane Austen's Emma or Dickens, you know, anything Dickens with all those famously long paragraphs if you have a student who can't write yet. Give them Eric Knight's Lassie Come Home or Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables. All right? That's just filled with beautiful grammar that's easily accessible to students. You also want to keep track of what students have read in order to ensure that the children are exposed to a variety of genres. Maybe you have lots of genres to pick from. Poetry, drama, biographies, you've got British and American works, science fiction, myth, theology, agrarian themes, stories, animal stories. Some students love Jim Harriet, some don't. Okay, you've got lots to pick from. This is a spreadsheet that one of my teachers came up with that helps her make an inventory of student book choices. She's able to keep a list of what Ellie Claire read for the summer before she entered that class, the first, second, third, fourth, 9 weeks, and then what she assigns as they are going into the first grade class. And this way she is keeping track. She actually, I think, does it the summer before. She's really organized. When I was teaching, I kept track of just that 9 weeks. Okay. Know your students' tastes in order to be able to challenge them. For example, I think your boys may balk at the idea of Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre, but if you teach them to love a good story for the sake of story, they could end up surprising themselves and actually liking Jane Eyre. With some well-placed literary tools in hand from a prepared teacher, the gentleman will find that the proverbial chick book is nonetheless a tremendous piece of literature. We had a girl once who just verbally deplored fantasy. I hate fantasy. Never going to read fantasy. We challenged her, okay, wait, why don't you read one of Tolkien's works? One, just read one. We did not assign all three of the trilogy. That's kind of cruel. Don't do that. All right. One, we gave her one, and she came back and she said, okay, I kind of appreciate it now. So know their tastes. Try to challenge them a bit. Push them a bit. Really helps here if you as a teacher are communicating your particular loves to the children as well. We had a male Tradidio teacher who confessed that his favorite piece of fiction was Anne of Green Gables. That went a long way to making a girly book cool for our sixth grade boys to read. And then we were able to perform the play as well. So that went a long way. Be careful that you don't prejudice your students to loving what you love over what their parents love. That's a matter for another workshop, but be careful. Also, be familiar with the school's entire Boni Libri list in order to know the pool of books from which each teacher will be choosing, and that will avoid duplications on your part. An issue that will arise is when a student begins a book and for whatever reason is unable to complete it. All right, so you've assigned what you thought was a very accessible work, and that student cannot finish it. As a teacher, you need to be doing periodic checks to see how your students are progressing in order to avoid this as much as possible, but nonetheless, this comes up every year. So depending on your time frame and the ability of the student, here's a few of the solutions that we've implemented as we've gone along. First, we've extended the deadline for completion by 1 week for that student. So we just extend our deadline. What we did, say you have a third grader who just really was plain old lazy and more than capable of reading the book you assigned. So you pull his mom in and chat with her, and she agrees he's more than capable of finishing the book. And you know what else? Not only can he finish the book this week, we will have a card ready too. And so you both agree, okay, great. By Friday, we'll see the card, and he will have read the book. And it works out great. We've had an older student who, in the busyness of the semester finals, she allowed that to get in the way of finishing her Boni Libri. And so we discussed this with her, and she humbly agreed, yeah, I just let time get past. And you know what? I can finish that book and my card over the weekend. And she did it. So we just discuss it with your students and your parents. Just make a note of it on your spreadsheet or on your assignment form so that you can keep track and help them keep accountable, because you don't want them to repeat this, and you don't want them to then think that they can presume on grace every 9 weeks. Another solution we've implemented is we've been watching the students, and you get to week three. How are you guys doing on your Boni Libris? And one student comes up and says, I'm not doing really well. In fact, you know that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle guy you gave me to read? I don't get that stuff. And so then you discuss it. Well, is it just the British humor or the British writing? What is it about it? I don't think I like murder mystery. Oh, really? Well, then assign something else. Or if it's just the British part of Sherlock Holmes, how about you try Agatha Christie? Okay? So kind of keep track of it and know by that third week, if this child is not doing well with this book, let's try another book. All right? He may get over the hump, or you may have to assign something really short and sweet for him to finish up. The third thing we've done, here's another scenario that has happened. We have had students who truly have very little support at home to do any of this reading, and they're seriously struggling with comprehension. They just don't get it. You may need to jumpstart this little guy by scheduling some after-school reading sessions with him. Come on, you have some time after school. Why don't you spend 30 minutes, and we'll read the book together. I'll read part of it out loud, and then you read a part of it. We've also been able to do this with peer tutors. We've had maybe a 10th grader say, I'd love to read with so-and-so after school. Okay, come on. He's reading, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Would you like to come and help him? Yes. So they may read one page, and then the peer tutor will read the next page out loud. Just be willing to go to great lengths to grow this love for the written word in your students. Remember that the whole program is designed to woo students to reading, so be prepared to have justice and mercy kiss to help them love the spirit of the law. Be gracious in implementing the policies that you set up. The outcome that we found of our Boni Libri program has been well-read students who have become great fans of reading. They've grown in their appetites for great literature. They have a reference tool of their own now for making book choices in the future. And quite simply, they've read a hefty amount of respectable literature. So I heartily recommend this extracurricular Boni Libri program to you. Any questions that any of you have about implementing this, or yes? The question was, what if your literature classes really don't read together in class? They assign it outside of class? You may even see, how much homework are they actually going home with? You know, are they assigning a bunch? Then that may be your, you wouldn't be able to assign but one book every semester. You know, you'd have to back off a bit instead of one book every 9 weeks. Or two books every 9 weeks. You may have to back off a bit. I love being able to give the students an opportunity to read great books that they would like to read that are not in their literature class. So this is one of those ways to do that as well. Ma'am.
How many books are actually in your literature class?
Hold on, let me see if I can show. My upper elementary? In my sixth grade class, we probably read six books for the entire year together in class. Ma'am.
Are you doing only index cards? Written cards, or are you doing like real books?
No, ma'am, that's the only thing we do. Why do you do long ones? We have writing class. We do imitations. We do the Progymnasmata, the great writing. So we're doing more of the, where we're mimicking the great writers, the fables, that thing. This is just turns out to be a tool for them. Ma'am. Yes. Listen. Three index cards stapled together. I'm like, that's not a summary. It's a book. it's funny because different teachers have allowed that, and so you can see that there's several things stapled. But I try to really remind my teachers, keep it to one card. Because, when they're 32 and they look at this card, they're not going to want to read a three-card summary. Try to keep it to one. Great question. Anything else? Ma'am. It is pass-fail, so if you do not turn it in when it is due and we do not have a good reason and you've presumed on grace for the last 9 weeks and you just don't have a reason for not having your Boni Libri card, it reduces your literature grade one entire step. So if you're going to get an A, you will get a B. Yes. It is, and we really kind of hammer this at parent orientation so that they'll be very aware this is a board policy. Boni Libri is important to turn in on time. So it's just pass fail. Ma'am. Sure. I'd love to see. Yeah, you could even email me, and I'll email it back to you. Yeah, I'd love to. And remember, I have two. I have the grammar one or the logic and rhetoric. So if you like both of them, just let me know. I'll have someone else do it because obviously this is not my gift. Thank you all very much.